it's Flo, and this is my impression of a beat poet. Name your price. A tool, an idea, an inspiration. To do more than just say what you want to pay. Oh, no, but to see the options that could fit your budget. Steve, enough bongos.
Find car insurance that fits your budget at Progressive.com.
Makes me want to dance. Steve!
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Show Talk with Angela Butler. I am Angela Butler. On tonight's show, the guest is Mr. Mark Hiding. He is the National Advocacy Coordinator with Prince Services Concerned About the Death Penalty, which is a project of EJUSA. Most recently, he spoke in the Panhandle, or Florida, or Northwest Florida, and that's near me. Yes, well, that's actually where I'm located. So I'm interested in what Mr. Hiding has to say about the death penalty and about the group that he's in, conservatives concerned about the death penalty, which again is a project of EJUSA. Good afternoon, Mr. Hiding. How are you?
I'm doing great, Angela. Thanks for having me on your show.
Thank you for coming on the show. So, there's some concern among conservatives about the death penalty. You recently spoke in the Panhandle in Florida, and I believe you were well-received, am I correct?
I did quite well because, you know, when we talk about the way the death penalty system is run right now, it runs counter to every principle that conservatives really hold dear. And I was carrying that message to a couple tea parties in Panama City and Fort Walton Beach and to the college Republicans at the University of West Florida. And when you tell them about how the program is actually being run now, that it risks innocent life, that it costs more than life without parole, that it gives an error-prone government the power to kill its citizens, and it fails to deter murder, there's not too many reasons to support the death penalty. And I found that when I go into many of these speaking engagements, and I of course always love to go back to the Panhandle, I find that about halfway through I have people looking at me and, you know, they're skeptical of me. They're not sure if I'm a real conservative. But once I start laying out the case, they start to see it too. And by the end, we had many more supporters after going to these speaking events in Florida.
Okay. Yes. The Panhandle of Florida in particular is what I'm interested in, of course. But actually, I'm also against the death penalty. I just like to say that. Recently, the governor of Florida, my governor too, Governor Rick Scott enacted the Timely Justice Act. And we both know that Florida currently leads the United States with 24 its gonorrhea. Could you please explain to the listening audience what the Timely Justice Act is and what it does?
Well, the Timely Justice Act is something that many different states have been looking into, and Florida, I believe, is one of the first to actually enact it. And what it does, it's no surprise to anyone involved in this to find that the death penalty system is a decades-long process, and it's very expensive. So So they've decided in Florida, the governor has signed into legislation the Timely Justice Act to shorten the appeals process, make it cheaper, and streamline it. But the problem is, when you shorten the appeals process, you virtually guarantee that an innocent person will be executed. You only have to look as far as North Carolina and Louisiana, where in the past few months, two men have been released, one in each state, from death row after being there for more than 30 years. But yet Florida wants to shorten the appeals process that has saved these men from being executed wrongly by the state. And you can look at the case of Paul Hildwin in Florida. He's on death row right now, but he's been there, I believe, for 28 years. And recently, the Florida Supreme Court found that there was DNA evidence that actually implicated a different man other than Paul Hildwin. So they reversed his conviction.
Yes.
But he didn't get released from prison. He didn't get released from death row because Pam Bondi decided to retry him. But they're finding this out after 28 years, but yet they want to shorten the appeals process and kill people quicker.
Yes, and Florida leads the nation with exonerees, people who have been found not guilty.
That's right, and that's quite a dubious honor to have that many wrongful convictions, more than even Texas. In Texas, they're quite bad at the death penalty, but they use it with much more frequency. So there's reason to give us pause in Florida. There's reason for us to say, take a step back and say, maybe we don't want to speed this up. Because there's several issues in Florida that make the death penalty much worse than in many other states.
Yes, it does. It also, I can cite some reasons that you have given. Well, not you yourself, excuse me, for that era. But I was reading, and according to what I've been reading, conservatives concerned, you know, about the death penalty. The reasons that I've been reading that it's immoral, does not deter murder, affects minorities, and that it affects minorities disproportionately, and it's very costly. How much would Florida save if they just had people to do life without parole?
Well, that's a really good question, and there's a lot of different cost studies in different states, and there's been a few that were done in Florida, and I like to remind everybody that each of these studies do have some issues, and it's hard to put an exact number. But the last estimate I saw suggested that the state of Florida would immediately save over $50 million a year simply by switching everybody that got sentenced to death, switching them to life without parole. That's immediate savings of $50 million that we could divert elsewhere, or we could return to the taxpayers. And this is an annual charge that's coming to the taxpayers every year, and the studies are showing that the death penalty is actually becoming more and more expensive. So you can expect to see that amount rise. Now, that was a 14-year-old study that said that, so that doesn't account for inflation, and it's likely much more expensive than that now.
Okay. It also, the money could be spent on police officers, courts, public defenders, legal service agency, and prison cells. Those are other reasons. And, of course, I'm concerned, again, about death row because I'm not for it. So what is the number of wrongful death row convictions here in the United States, do you know?
That's a really good question, and there's no real answer for it because the criminal justice system as it operates now, it's not put together to go back and look at old cases and see if, in fact, they were innocent. That's not really how the system works. But we can certainly point to several cases where people have been executed, and there are serious doubt regarding the veracity of their verdict. I like to always point out Carlos de Luna in Texas. He was executed when there was zero physical evidence tying him to the scene, tying him to the crime, and he was executed because one man said he was the guy, and that person said he was 50% sure that de Luna was the perpetrator. And meanwhile, someone else was going around town bragging about how he was the one that actually murdered the person that Carlos de Luna got stuck with killing or got that placed on him. So there's a lot of cases out there where people were executed when there was serious doubt, and Carlos de Luna is one of those cases, but you can find several in other states as well.
Okay. All right. So I was reading also, it says that North Carolina has put to death 43 people since 1976. And I'm reading that it costs $2.16 million per execution.
Yeah, there's that's another one of the really good cost studies that has come out in the past several years. That's a really in-depth one, but I always like to caution people that it's not precise. And if you look at the it's not a bad study. Please don't take it that way. But it's hard to make those numbers concrete because that 2.14 million or 1.6 million in addition that they are spending for the death sentence. That doesn't include the cost, the increased cost that you have from prosecutors, because they spend a lot of time on the death penalty as opposed to life without parole cases. It doesn't include the costs incurred at the court level, the judges. They're paid salaries too. So it doesn't include that. So I've read and I've heard from the person that did that study that the estimates of it being $2 million more expensive is probably a pretty conservative estimate, and it could be much more.
Okay. All right. Goodness. So there was a Republican state senator in Kansas by the name of Miss Carolyn, Senator Carolyn Mack. Again, I hope I pronounced her name now. And she pointed out that her state had restored the death penalty in 1994 and not executed anybody in more than 40 years. It says in February, it doesn't say which year, she introduced a bill to replace capital punishment with life without parole.
Yeah, and it's great to point that out because even though certain states don't exercise the death penalty, they're still paying for it. And they're paying for it because the initial trial is many times longer than life without parole trials. There's more motions, there's more experts, there's more attorneys. It's a mountain of legal fees. Then there's an additional trial that is unique to capital cases, and it exists just to see if the offender can receive a death sentence. And then beyond that, you have an appeals process that's longer than any other in the criminal justice system, and it's an automatic process. And it's so long that many offenders actually die of old age while they wait on the death penalty. But they wait for it on death row, which is more expensive than general population. So these are the reasons that even though people are being sentenced to death in Kansas, but they're not being executed, it's still costing the taxpayers an arm and a leg, but they're not actually executing anyone.
Oh, goodness. Okay. All right. So it doesn't sound good at all. It's bad. I know if one, I was reading that, I believe, and I also was reading about the conservative concerns about the death penalty, that one of them said that even if one innocent person is executed and 20 go free, that's still wrong.
That's something that Benjamin Franklin said as well. And I think conservatives, including myself, you know, I'm a very pro-life individual. And I don't want to see any innocent lives risked, and definitely don't want to see any innocent lives taken by the state. And I think that's something that we need to look at. It's a very good point, and I believe that's Blackstonian philosophy that you're quoting. Because if the state executes an innocent U.S. citizen, it's really the state then is no better than the offenders that it's trying to execute. And I don't believe that we as conservatives should stand for a program that risks killing us. I think that makes perfect sense, and it's counterintuitive to give an error-prone government the power to kill you.
Yes. I'm also reading about former Congressman Ron Paul. I believe he's endorsed conservatives concerned about the death penalty. Mr. Ron Paul is a former presidential candidate, I believe.
Yes, he is out of Houston, Texas, and we felt really blessed, very fortunate to have his support. And unlike many other people, the way they talk about the death penalty, he got straight to the point, and he just said that capital punishment is completely inconsistent with traditional conservatism, and he expressed support for our goals that we're doing, trying to shatter the myth that all conservatives support the death penalty. But we're actually being able to grow our coalition, including people like Richard Viguerie, who's known as the funding father of American conservatism. He helped launch our group. There's also Jay Sekulow, the conservative evangelical litigator. He was one of our earliest supporters. And we're also seeing other individuals, like Colonel Oliver North. He's against the death penalty, and I've had the pleasure of sitting down with him as well. And you can look at many others. Michael Steele, the former chairman of the Republican Party, he's very much against the death penalty as well. So there's a broad coalition, a broad group of conservatives and libertarians that are unifying in their opposition to the death penalty, because I don't think there's a bigger government program than one that can kill you.
Yes, I know since taking office, I'm the governor in my state, Governor Rick Scott, I'm reading, and I've done my research, and it shows that he signed 11 death warrants, and 13 inmates faced the many issues of death warrants according to the accelerated timetable laid out of the Justice Act.
That's really scary, and you can also look at Governor Perry in Texas, and he signed several hundred. You see, this should be giving some people pause, because when they're signing that, they're signing someone's death sentence quite literally. And, you know, Governor Perry has said that he's lost no sleep on signing any of those. But there has been some serious doubt on many executions, and I think that should give them pause, because they're the last stop that can possibly prevent a wrongful execution, and I hope they think twice about it next time.
Okay, so there are currently more than 100 death row inmates, and 100 of them have already filed a challenge to the act in the state Supreme Court. Now, I believe this lawsuit was filed in late June about the death penalty here in Florida.
There's I'm not exactly familiar with that lawsuit. There's actually several of them. There's been a few challenges on the Timely Justice Act, and there's also been challenges about the new lethal injection protocols that we're seeing in different states. You may be referencing one of those, probably the lethal injection. And what we're seeing there is the European companies that used to supply the drugs to the different states in order to administer lethal injection to kill someone. Well, they no longer will supply those drugs to the state. So many states have decided that they're going to become creative, and they're going to make their brand new drug combinations to kill people. But they're going to keep it a secret from the taxpayers where they're getting it, which I don't believe that's transparency in government. And we should know where they're buying it, because it's being done with or it's being purchased with taxpayer funds. And we're seeing the fruits of this so-called creativity, because there's been multiple botched executions. You can look at Clayton Lockett in Oklahoma. They tried to execute him, and after 45 minutes of him not dying, they pulled out the line that was put into his veins, and he had a heart attack about an hour later. You can also look in Arizona. There was an individual there, and he was executed, but it took almost 2 hours. Executions, the way they were before with the old drug combinations, were supposed to take anywhere, I believe, from 7 to 13 minutes. But now we're seeing them take multiple hours. There's one individual in Oklahoma before Clayton Lockett who, prior to finally dying, he jumped up on the gurney and screamed, "My whole body is burning." So the way it's quite terrifying. But the way that we're getting these drugs and being creative, I think, creates transparency issues. And we're seeing what can happen when the government tries to intervene and create its own combinations. And it's not very fruitful what they're doing. And I think that's very obvious. And you're seeing many states are slowing down their executions to make sure that they've got correct cocktails, because these were untested drugs or untested combinations prior to these executions.
Okay, and I believe here in the United States of America is that a 40-year low. People are not as many people for death row as they used to be.
There's a big shift that we've seen, especially since the 80s and 90s, but we are at a 40-year low for support for capital punishment. I'm happy to see that, and I think with each failure that we see with the death penalty is more and more reason why there's less people supporting it. But I like to point people to a poll that I saw in North Carolina. that showed that 68% of North Carolinians support repealing and replacing the death penalty with a system of life without parole where the offender actually has to work to pay restitution to the victim's families. And I know Bill O'Reilly has also expressed his support for such a system, but I think that makes a lot more sense than what we're doing now, because that leaves open the possibility where the offender can help pay something back to the family that he stole from. But it doesn't risk killing an innocent person like the death penalty does. So I think there's a lot of positives there. And also, when you keep them in prison for life, they're neutralized as a threat. They're not going to hurt anybody in society, but it also gives them the opportunity of redemption, which I, as a Christian, would like to see that opportunity afforded to many more. And I know people like Jay Sekulow and many other Christian conservatives find that to be appalling, because they want every opportunity for them to become saved.
Yes, and I know here in Florida they used to have the dip chair, the electric chair, but now they have lethal injection, which are both bad, which is both horrible when you take a life, to me. Okay.
Well, and you know, the many states are actually trying to bring back the electric chair, and I'm not sure if they've gotten to that point in Florida yet, but you can look at Tennessee, where they just passed a law that if they can no longer use lethal injection drugs, that they can use the electric chair as a backup. And, you know, I'm sure you may have seen the Green Mile, where there was a botched execution in the electric chair. And I want to remind people, you know, that was fiction, that movie. But the botched executions with electric chairs were very real, and they were very disturbing, and they did happen. And there's a likelihood that if they bring it back, there will be more of those as well. And I don't think Floridians want to see that.
No, I, for one, don't. I did see the Green Mile also. I was noticing that the organization, conservatives concerned about the death penalty, have spinoff groups that are located in such states, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, North Carolina, Nebraska, Kansas, Missouri, and Kentucky.
We're seeing, and I'm very happy to take part in this, that when I started this work, I wasn't sure how I was going to be received, and I used to work with the National Rifle Association, and they put me in Panama City Beach, Florida. So I actually lived there while I worked for the National Rifle Association. That's God's country. It's beautiful down there. So I was used to being kind of the darling of the conservative crowd. And then I went to work with conservatives concerned about the death penalty, and I was worried that my peers were not going to accept me. But I found it's been the direct opposite. They've welcomed me in with open arms. And even more so than that, we're seeing that these different grassroots activists in different states are eager to be involved at the state level. So many are asking how they can create their own local conservatives concerned about the death penalty group. And we're seeing that it's happening with some measured success. North Carolina has reached kind of a critical mass of conservatives from across the state, and they're working alongside us to educate people on the many problems with the death penalty. But you're also seeing other states that are moving in that direction too. You mentioned Nebraska, which I believe is very close to repealing the death penalty. They nearly had enough votes in a test vote. It looked like they had enough to pass it last legislative session. And they're doing some great work with conservatives. So is Kansas, which that's another state I'm really excited about, and I think we're close to repealing it there too. And Montana is actually where conservatives concerned about the death penalty traces its roots. There were a group of grassroots conservatives and some conservative legislators who all came together. And they all found out, we're all against the death penalty. We're all conservatives. So they created their own conservatives concerned about the death penalty group, and they saw some success with what they were doing there, and other people around the United States saw that too, and that's actually what prompted the creation of the National Conservatives Concerned About the Death Penalty group that I was a part of debuting when we finally went public in 2013 at CPAC.
You have conferences and things, I believe. Am I correct?
Oh, we go to many conferences and a lot of conservative ones, and I just reference CPAC, which we go back annually. It's the largest gathering of conservatives in the United States, and that was our first big test. And you know, I mentioned it earlier that I was worried how my peers might accept me, but we were debuting at CPAC where there was maybe 10,000 conservatives. I was worried, I won't lie, but the reception was amazing, and we've carried that our successes from that conference to many other conferences. We've gone to LPAC, which is the Libertarian Political Action Conference, Young Americans for Liberty. We've been there multiple times.
Okay.
They're strategic partners of ours. We've also been Ralph Reed's group, the Road to Majority Conference, which is more of a Christian right conference. And I only met one person there who supported the death penalty. Everybody else was concerned or completely with us, because when you look at the death penalty, it doesn't fit within our principles. And especially at a conference that was very, very Christian, very, very pro-Christian right, I think many people see it as perhaps inconsistent with their views of Christianity, which I enjoy having that discussion. You know, I'm a son of a preacher, so I'm a Christian as well. And I think a lot of my friends over the Catholic Mobilizing Network, they've made these little bumper stickers that says, "Who would Jesus execute?" And if you're going to live your life with the attitude of what would Jesus do and to lead you in what you're going to do, you do have to ask yourself, "Who would Jesus execute?" And I personally don't believe Jesus would execute anyone, but that's open for discussion as well.
Yes, it's also a moral issue also. In a way, you know, in a way it is to me. That's my opinion, though. I have a question. What is the risk of executing an innocent person? I mean, how real is that? And, I mean, I know what the statistics say, but what are the chances of someone being innocent and being executed here in the United States of America?
It's hard to put an actual number on it. I've seen a study that has attempted to, but I can give you some numbers. Right now, since the 1970s, more than 145 individuals have been wrongly convicted and released from death row. Now, many others, like I said, have been executed when there was serious doubt regarding the veracity of their verdict. So if you break that down, for about every 10 people that are executed, one is wrongly convicted and released. Now, I did see a study that came out recently that took the numbers of the wrongful convictions that we've seen and the ones that may have pled out, whether it's an offered plea to get out of prison because they technically most likely didn't commit the crime. Now, they found that perhaps if the numbers are stable from that point, that probably about 4.1% of people on death row are wrongly convicted. Whether or not that gets found out or not, you know, we'd have to wait and see, because many of them are all in different parts of the process. And, you know, as we were talking about, this is an incredibly long process, and it's taken as long as 33 years for someone to clear their name and be released from death row. So the risk is real. Anytime you give the government this kind of power, because the government's made of humans who are fallible, so that risk is there, and I think those numbers speak for themselves. And I think you're right when you said that you'd rather see 20 guilty men go free than one innocent man killed by the government.
Yes, I agree with the person who said that also, that I was reading about. I can't recall who it was just now, but I agree with them. I also believe that another point was made. I don't know if you yourself made it, I believe that's part of the agenda of the conservatives concerned about death row, if I'm not mistaken, that not just because it's immoral, but it does not deter murder.
That's right.
And it affects minorities disproportionately, and that concerns me too.
Well, that should concern everybody.
Yes, sir. Yes. It concerns everybody. I'm not trying to, you know, but I'm just saying, you know, these are the reasons that with the SMR, it does not deter murder and affects minority disproportionately. Are these some of the reasons?
Oh, there's multiple reasons. There's no shortage of reasons. You know, I can go through them, and you know, I'd like to. So you were talking about the issue of race, and that's one that's not discussed nearly enough, and it should bother many people. I point out in Colorado, I believe their population is around 4% African American. Their population. But their death row population is 100% African-American. So I think when you see numbers like that that are very striking, that throws up a red flag and says, hey, there may be something wrong going on with this system. We need to look at it. We need to rectify it. Because the truth is, if there's a potentially a crime that was committed, a rather heinous one, you know, if you're poor or if you are perhaps in a minority status, a person of color, chances are it's not going to turn out very well for you. And I think we can look at many different statistics that can support that. But going to the deterrent side of it, I supported the death penalty for a long time. And I've always been a conservative, and I knew that it wasn't pro-life because it risked innocent life. I even knew that it was more expensive than life without parole, and I was willing to accept that. I was willing to sacrifice my own principles to try to find a way to support the death penalty because I thought that's what good conservative boys and girls do. So I said, perhaps it is pro-life if it saves more innocent lives than are accidentally killed by the government. But I finally saw some studies that came out that says, no, the death penalty doesn't deter murder. And one of the largest studies that's ever been done found that there was zero credible evidence suggesting that the death penalty deters murder. And I can break it down into just pretty easy numbers. For every 100 murders that are occurred, one of those will result in a death sentence. Fewer than that one will actually get executed. And of that one that does get executed, that'll happen maybe 20 to 30 years down the road. Now, do you think that runs through anybody's mind before they commit an atrocious act? I mean, I don't think so.
I don't think
the death penalty deters murder. I really don't. And I think there's some viable alternatives that we could look to instead of what we're using right now. And I think you're right to point that out and also to point out the racial disparities and the criminal justice system. And I think that's something that goes beyond, I don't want to get in the weeds too much, but it goes beyond just the death penalty. And we're seeing some on the right, we're seeing, you know, the Chris Christies, we're seeing the Rand Pauls that are looking at the criminal justice system through a different lens. And if we are going to have a criminal justice system, which I think we should, it needs to be fair, it needs to be unbiased, and it needs to be balanced.
Criminal justice system is disproportionately black and brown. That's just fact. I mean, that's reality. That's fact, unfortunately. And that's wrong, too. But such as the case here in Florida about Miss Marissa Alexandra. I feel like that's wrong. I'm not asking to comment on that, though. I feel like she's really been doing wrong. But that's not, you know, what this show is about. But I still feel that way. So Florida would be saving, you know, here in Florida, they would save millions and millions of dollars. In Maryland, too, I do believe.
Maryland came out with a study, and now they've repealed the death penalty 2 years ago. So far, six states in the past 7 years have repealed the death penalty. And, you know, I'm happy to say that Equal Justice USA, who is the parent organization of conservatives concerned about the death penalty, has played a huge role in the repeal of many of those states. And one of the big studies that came out from the Urban Institute that was very detailed showed that it was millions more dollars to execute someone as opposed to lock them up in prison for the rest of their life. And that was one of the best studies that's perhaps the gold standard of cost studies that have come out. But they're echoing what we're seeing in every other state that does a cost study. There's a common theme that each one of these states that the death penalty is far more expensive than life without parole, and it's becoming more and more expensive practically on an annual basis. And you know just as well as many other people that are politically active that somebody has to pay for those expensive and lengthy processes and programs.
taxpayers pay for it.
Absolutely. And you can look at Jasper County, Texas. They had to raise their property taxes by 7% just to cover the cost of one death penalty trial. Now, remember that the death penalty likely doesn't deter crime, and it fails murder victims' family members. So if I were a taxpayer in Jasper County, Texas, I would like to know what I'm actually paying for, because it doesn't seem like it's giving anything back to society.
And I'm not trying to be racist, but the facts are here in the United States of America, there are very few Caucasians executed for killing blacks. I mean,
there's a lower percentage. Usually when the offender or when the victim is actually a white person, usually those have a higher likelihood of ending up with a death sentence, and you're absolutely correct. And there's been several studies that have looked into that. So when it's actually an African-American who is the victim, there's a lower probability of that resulting in a death sentence. Now, there's a lot of considerations that perhaps may have gone into making some of those decisions, but when you see some of these racial disparities, I believe that we as taxpayers, since we're paying for these programs, we deserve an answer, because if the government is supposed to be colorblind like everyone else should be, we deserve an answer to find out why this is.
Yes, and interesting that you brought up Jasper, Texas, because in Jasper, Texas, there was, I believe, the execution there of a white man killing a black man. It's interesting that you brought that up.
I'm not familiar with which. That may be the same execution that led to the tax increase in Jasper County, because it's a pretty small county that they don't use the death penalty too much, because, you know, it'll make them go bankrupt, because that's how expensive the death penalty is. And we see this in other counties too. Jefferson County, Florida, just, you know, a little east of Tallahassee, they almost went bankrupt due to the costs incurred from two death penalty trials. They had to slash their library budgets. They had to halt pay increases to county employees, because it really creates a major physical shock to small counties when they attempt to go for a death penalty, because the trial alone can be over $1 million.
Yes, yes. Yes, it can. It's very costly. I specifically had a gentleman on my show about the Jasper, Texas murder. It was the man, I believe it was Mr. Lawrence Brewer. He was convicted in Jasper, Texas, for dragging death of a black man.
Oh, no.
That's horrible.
Unfortunately, there are horrific acts out there.
Yes,
and
sir.
You know, I'm confronted with that many times with my work, that there are people who commit some atrocious acts. And sometimes
yes.
you have that emotional response. I know a lot of people that have emotional responses that immediately say, well, they deserve the death penalty. But I want everybody to remember, and all of your listeners to remember, that when you are looking at the death penalty, don't ask yourself, do some people deserve to die? Ask yourself, do you trust the government to get it right all the time and to do it efficiently, properly, and in a balanced, unbiased way? And I think the answer to that is no, unequivocally. I don't trust the government to do it properly and efficiently.
Yes, and gentlemen, I'm back to this. I'm not trying to harp on this, but Mr. Lawrence Brewer, he was convicted in a Jasper, Texas dragging death, which means he dragged a black man behind the truck. Until he was dead. The gentleman's name was, at the time, he was 49-year-old James Byrd Jr. He tied him to the truck and dragged him. So I understand what you're talking about when you talk about Jasper, Texas, because I had a gentleman who did a documentary on my show.
You know, the interesting thing that I've seen with many different murders, and this is likely the case with what you're explaining from Jasper County, Texas, is that if you look at many different horrific acts that have happened, the way that the process is set up now, if I were to ask you the victims, one of Jeffrey Dahmer's victims, one of Charles Manson's victims, most people can't remember them, because the way the system operates, the victim is generally forgotten, but it's the offender that becomes a household name, and I don't think that's the best way of remembering or taking care of the lives of those who are lost, and I don't think that's exactly fair to murder victims' family members. And that's another thing that I have the pleasure of actually working closely with many murder victims' family members. Some of them are very conservative individuals as well. And they oppose the death penalty, and they're speaking out against it because it's such a lengthy process, and it re-traumatizes them through a decade-long process of trials, appeals, and media attention. You know, they forget about the victim, but everybody remembers the offender, and they promise them a death sentence. And oftentimes, that promise is not kept, depending on, or because that's how the system is actually structured. And I'd like to tell a story about a very nice lady that I met when I was in Indianapolis, and she works to repeal the death penalty. She had a family member that was murdered, and she opposed the death penalty even before that. So she knew that her family member would not support this person being executed by the state. But the DA told her, if you say that in front of the jury, I will hold you in contempt of court. Don't you think that she deserves to have some sort of say in what's happening with her family member that was murdered? But they were told her that she's not allowed to let the jury know, that if she says anything about that while she's on the stand, that they'll hold her in contempt. And I think that says something about our current system. There's definitely something wrong with it, and I feel very safe in saying that it's utterly broken.
Yes, the system is broken. The criminal justice system itself is broken, it's wrong, it's unfair, and it's unjust. But I was also reading about an extreme, what is considered to be a really, really extreme example, which is in California. And it says that the death row costs taxpayers, I know you said it, the statistics and the amounts aren't always correct, but this is pretty close, I believe. About $114 million a year behind the cost of imprisoning convicts for life. And I believe the state of California has executed 13 people since 1976. And I believe the dollar amount given would maybe lower or more is $250 million per execution. And it also, I'm reading different things. It says that the California is filled to bursting. And some people believe that's unconstitutional.
Well, California is probably the poster child for fiscal irresponsibility when it comes to the death penalty. And that study has been out, and they've updated it as well. And they found that they've spent $4 billion on the death penalty program since the 70s. And they've executed 13 people. And I'd like your listeners to think for a second, is spending $4 billion to kill three people, is that efficiency in government? Because I sure don't think so. And I think that speaks to some really big issues. Imagine what you can do with that $4 billion. You could return it to the taxpayers, or you could set it up to where police officers have new ways of detecting crime, or they're allowed to have more deputies to try to prevent crime from actually occurring. There's many other things you could do with $4 billion to better the world, to better California, than to execute 13 people. And that's one of the most egregious case studies that are out there. But that shows the same thing that you see in every state that has a study, that the death penalty is so much more expensive than life without parole, and we as the taxpayers are stuck with this burden, and many of us don't actually support the death penalty. And this is one of the many reasons that you're seeing so many states finally say, we've tried to fix the death penalty, it risks innocent life, it's causing tax increases and a burden on the taxpayers, it's time we just repeal it because we've tried to fix it and it just doesn't work. It's an irrevocably broken system.
Yes, I agree completely. Yes, I agree. I don't know if you want to talk about this, and I'm not trying to make you uncomfortable, but do you on my hesitation, I apologize for that, but do the conservatives concerned about the death penalty, do they ever address the issue of the anti-lynching bill?
To the what bill?
The anti-lynching bill that NAACP has been working on. Do you ever work with them on anything like that, the anti-lynching bill that NAACP, you know?
We're concerned about the death penalty. I've worked with some of the ACLU, and I know that our parent organization does a lot of work with the NAACP, and I've actually been in talks with a few individuals because I want to host a panel discussion with the NAACP and with conservatives concerned about the death penalty, because we have some very common concerns. I'm very much against the death penalty, and many people in the NAACP are very against it as well. And they were a great partner organization for Equal Justice USA in the repeal campaign to repeal the death penalty in Maryland. They've been a fantastic partner, and we work towards some very common goals. And, you know, we see a program that has some real issues, and the NAACP has been out in front on this, and I really appreciate some of the hard work they've done, and I appreciate being able to partner with them, and I sincerely hope that I'm able to partner with them in the future on many more occasions.
Okay. Well, thank you for talking about the anti-lynching bill. I'm hoping it will be passed too one day. I know an apology was issued, I believe, if it's around June 13, 2005, or near that time. An apology was issued by one of the senators about the apology for not passing the anti-lynching bill. I know you might not know anything about that.
I'm a little bit ignorant. Is this a state senator?
No, I didn't say it was in Florida, no, ma'am.
Sorry about that. I'm a little unfamiliar with that. We stay kind of in a very narrow scope with just on the death penalty at the national level. So I don't get to read every single one of these, unfortunately. Though I would like a little more information, so I'd really like you to send it to me as well.
Oh yes, sir. Yes, it doesn't say it's the Senate itself. It might have been the whole that the Senate. It doesn't say what year or anything like that. But I know that this really happened. They were expected to pass a resolution, is what I'm reading, to apologize to Afro-Americans failing to pass the anti-lynching legislation. And it says NPR Charles Edwards report.
Well, as they should, and I don't know if you ventured over into Marianna, Florida, but there's...
Yes, I do.
As you probably know, there's a tree by the courthouse that I was told was actually the setting for the last lynching in Florida. And when I was being told this story, I was conjuring up images of the 1800s, but I think it was in the 1950s when this occurred. And it blows your mind to realize that there was that kind of action, that kind of so-called vigilante, so-called justice happening. 1950s were not that long ago. And I'd like to think that we have come a ways away from that, but we've not gone nearly far enough.
Yes, I agree. Most recently, Marianna, Florida, Jackson County, Florida, had its Civil War relived. And, you know, there's a lot of people there, and they were reliving the Civil War. I don't know if Marianna, Florida, cut that tree down or not. The tree may still be there where the black man was hung. I believe it's allegedly raping someone, a white woman. Not certain about all that. But I know what you're talking about, because I just passed by the courthouse today, as a matter of fact. And, you know, and I was thinking about that. Yeah.
It's an enormous tree, and it's it kind of hovers over you, and you know, you never look at that tree the same way once you find out what really happened there. I mean, we don't know. He did not go through
Jackson County Courthouse. Yeah.
Yeah, he did not go through the full judicial process. We don't know. I don't know his guilt or innocence regarding that, but that definitely was not due process, and that was not that long ago. And you know, this is, I'm glad we're having this discussion. I hope people in the panhandle are thinking about it, because it was not that long ago. But we're still having issues with the criminal justice system. It may not be vigilante justice, but we're still risking killing innocent lives at the hands of the government while we're paying an enormous amount of money. And I think that should give us all pause, and we should all want to take a step back and decide, is this program consistent with conservative principles? And I know many of my friends that are conservatives and also Christians, oftentimes, you know, they talk about the Bible, especially the Old Testament. And I'm confronted with this with regularity. I have people walk up to me and they say, yeah, I support the death penalty, eye for an eye. But I like to remind people that the Bible, when it references eye for an eye, that is not a mandate. The eye for an eye in the Bible actually says that you cannot go beyond the same action that was perpetrated upon you or the victim. So let's say, Angela, if you killed me, my family couldn't go kill your whole family. They could only kill you back. But that was a limitation. It wasn't a mandate. But I want everybody to remember that if you want to implement a biblical death penalty, the Old Testament death penalty, you know, there's much higher standards. You had to have a minimum of two eyewitnesses in order to execute someone in the Old Testament. And I want to remind all people as well, as I said before, I'm a Christian, and I'm not belittling the Bible at all when I say this, but in parts of the Old Testament, you're allowed to execute children for disrespecting their parents. And I don't think we want to see that as public. I don't think that's good public policy. But I think if you fast forward to the New Testament, it was Jesus that stopped the execution of an adulterer or a prostitute, depending on how you read the verses. And Jesus said, those without sin cast the first stone. And that would have been an acceptable Old Testament execution, but Jesus stopped it. And I think that there's a story in that we can take with us, that perhaps we're not perfect. We shouldn't be able to put that sort of we shouldn't judge someone in a way to where we can kill them, that it's better left up to God. And if we want to neutralize them as a threat, there's ways we can do that without executing them.
Yes. It would be nice to see your organization work, you know, with other minority groups in passing such bills as the anti-lynching bill. Not just that of death row.
Absolutely, and I look for many opportunities. I've met with Hispanic organizations, Libra. I've been able to meet with them. The Hispanic Federation of Republican Voters, have been able to connect with them. And also there are some Frederick Douglass organizations. Frederick Douglass was a Republican and a thought leader and one of the earliest ones that you just see his picture and you recognize him. He was to quote Anchorman, he was a big deal, and he still is. And he was very opposed to the death penalty because he was very pro-life. And I think that's a great opening to where with African-American Republican voters and African-American conservatives and these organizations, that shows that it's not very conservative. And there's a reason why people have been questioning this program for that long and much longer as well. And I'd like to also point out that many of our forefathers actually opposed the death penalty. The father of the Bill of Rights, James Madison, actually opposed the death penalty. And Benjamin Franklin, he also opposed it. And he was the one that also uttered the, he'd rather 100 people go free than one innocent man executed. You and him have a lot in common. So we've seen that the issues with the death penalty and our concerns are not new, but I think we're getting to a point where they're bubbling up. And it doesn't matter. I want to remind people, I'm a conservative and my network is conservative, but this is an issue that can bring together both the left and the right, regardless of whether you're a Democrat or Republican or progressive or a conservative. This is something we can all agree on, because this is not a power we want the government to have. And I know the left, you know, they view it to be very offensive as well. And I believe in an age where bipartisanship is viewed as taboo, that this is a great issue that can bring the left and right together, and hopefully we can show people that there perhaps is some hope in being able to pass legislation in a bipartisan manner. And I think it's beautiful when there's an issue that everybody can actually agree on. And I think this is one that can be that issue.
Okay. We have about 6 minutes in the show. I'm going to thank you a little bit ahead of time for coming on the show talk with Angela Butler, Mr. Mark Heide. Hope I pronounced your name right. And I hope I gave you a great introduction, you know, so people know who you are. Again, listeners, you've been listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler, Mr. Mark Heide. He is the National Advocacy Coordinator with Conservatives Concerned About the Death Pit, the project of EJUSA, what do you call it?
It's EJUSA, it's Equal Justice,
yes.
USA, either one, they go by both names.
And you most recently were part of the National Rifle Association, I believe.
I was.
Served as a campaign field representative in the state of Florida.
Yes, and that was an amazing experience. When I started working for them, I had just finished a congressional race in North Carolina, and the NRA asked me. They said, we want to deploy you so you can start working in the field for us. Do you want to go to Sheboygan, Michigan, or do you want to go to Panama City Beach, Florida? And that didn't take too long for me to decide I did not want to go to Michigan. So that was a very easy choice, and I got to enjoy some of the most beautiful beaches in the world and some of the best people in the world, too. Very salt of the earth, people that I get along with, for the most part conservative, enjoy the outdoors. But it was actually in Florida when I first saw the posting for looking for a conservative organizer who's against the death penalty. And that was actually the light bulb moment in my life when I found out, there are other conservatives out there that have issues with the death penalty. And it was at that moment.
Yes. And everyone should have issues with the death penalty, and also the unfairness of the criminal justice system. It's unequal. Not only is it broken, it's unequal. It's not. There's no not much equality there. Really, there's no equality in the criminal justice system. It disproportionately affects Black Americans.
It's utterly broken, and you're absolutely correct.
Yes, it is.
And
Black
regardless,
and brown people are affected, both male and female. It's just horrible.
And that's one of the many reasons why people should be willing to look at this program for what it is, being broken. And being very biased. So we need to be willing to take a look at these programs for what they are. And you were did very well at explaining some of the many problems with it. And I think that's why we're seeing that this is an issue that's finally bringing the left and right together.
Yes, I hope so. I very much hope so. All right, Mr. Haddon, we have 2 minutes. Is there anything else you would like to say? I know you brought up Marianna Floyd, and as I was saying, I passed by the courthouse today, and I was there passing by the week before, and they, not too long ago, they were having the Civil War reenactment with the soldiers and everything. And of course, there was a tree there, and you talked about the lynching there in Marianna, Florida. I believe they said they cut the tree down, but I think they bring it up every year in the newspaper, they used to. In Marianna, Florida. I'm not 100% certain about that. But there's a tree still there, so it makes me wonder if that tree has actually cut down where the black man was lynched.
We can hope
that
so.
Up.
That's not a very good thing to remember, but even if it is there, it should give us another reminder why we should allow due process and not trust the government with that kind of power. And also that, you know, obviously lynchings are not a proud part of our history, and then we need to look at that. But, I wanted to add that, you know, if anybody wants to learn more about us, to go to conservativesconcern.org, and they can see our many supporters, which we're updating and adding new conservative leaders there on a regular basis. And they can also read our different fact sheets on innocence issues and cost issues and deterrence like you were discussing. And if they have any questions for me personally, I welcome them to send me an email at info@conservativesconcern.org.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mark Heide, for coming on Show Talk with Angela Butler.
Hey, Angela, thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you. You have a good night. All right, everyone. You've been listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. That was Mr. Mark Hiding, who's the National Advocacy Coordinator with Conservatives Concerned About the Death Penalty, which is a project of EJUSA. So I have a few seconds. I thank you all for listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. Everyone, have a good night.
Hey, it's Flo, and this is my impression of a person having a phone conversation in the elevator.
What? Yeah, no, I'm in the elevator. The elevator! Yeah! Anyway, I bundled our home and auto insurance through Progressive. No, bundled! We're gonna save big bucks now. No, bucks! Bucks!
Bundle your home and auto through Progressive and save.
Hello? Hello? She hung up.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company Affiliates. Home insurance provided and serviced by other select insurers.